Welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast with your hosts, Richard Hill and Matthew Darlitz.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. My name is Matthew Darlitz, editor-in-chief of the Science of Psychotherapy magazine, and I'm here with our managing editor, Richard Hill. How are you, Richard?
I am fantastic, thank you. And you're looking pretty sprightly yourself.
Oh, thank you. I'm all rugged up today. And I understand down Sydney way, you are freezing down there.
Yes, we're freezing to, it's fabulous. I've got a jumper, a pullover on, so that's very good. But of course, in our good friends in the States, you're all boiling to death. And in Europe, hopefully, you're just reducing a little bit and feeling a little bit less cooked as you get to the end of August. So lots of weather all over the world. But regardless of the weather, we've still got our fabulous thoughts and our fabulous ideas. And we've got a fabulous ideas pair with us today, that's for sure.
We do. So we're going across to the States once again, and we're going to be talking to Ernest and Catherine Rossi. Now, Richard, you have a lot to do with this couple. Tell us a little bit about them.
Oh, yes. Well, Ernest and Catherine are my mentors and have been for some time. I latched on to Ernie in 2005 and never let him go. and Catherine is so beautifully embraces us both. He's like my father, really. My mentor and father. And of course, we've written the book Mirroring Hands, The Guide to Mirroring Hands, which is that technique, but also these ideas of how we can return to a naturalness and natural states and natural ways of bringing ourselves towards health and well-being. And Ernie continues that battle and that excitement to understand what it's all about. And I think he's got some new things to say to us today. 86 new things to say. Good heavens. What an amazing mentor to have, I tell you.
Right. So that before we jump in, let me just point you to a reading course from last year, which does feature Catherine and Ernest. So Catherine talks about yoga and consciousness and a whole lot of things to do with yoga and neuropsychotherapy. So that's really cool. And then the two of them together have an article. It's called An Integrated Quantum Field Theory of the Evolution of Life. And again, extremely fascinating, a little bit technical, but it's something that you can really get your teeth into. So I'll put a link in the show notes so you can go straight to that reading course there. But Richard, what are we going to talk about today with them?
Well, actually, I'm not sure exactly, but I know that Ernie's started to return to his attention to the nature of numbers, the way in which we have patterns and we can see it and the usefulness of mathematics. And I think we're going to talk a little about calculus in a grand and glorious way. Let's see. Those are the things he hinted to me in his preparatory email I read the other day.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, let's see if we can get him on the line and have a chat. Ernest and Catherine Rossi, hello, and thank you so much for being on the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. It's so exciting to have you here. How are you both?
We are terrific.
We are terrific, yes.
And we're happy to be with all of you.
And it's Richard here, so I think you're looking terrific as well, even on the sound waves.
Now, we've had so much content from you, from the both of you, talking about different things. I thought it would be fantastic to have you on the show here so that our listeners can not only read you, but they can hear you. And if they're watching any other video, they can see you as well. So thank you so much for giving us your time to be on the show.
And I think the important thing for everyone to grasp is that Catherine Rossi and Ernest Rossi are just working, developing. We'll be doing some stuff with Catherine and her movement and yoga work in a couple of months' time, which is terrific. But Ernest Rossi, who is very, very welcome to sit back and put his feet up, is not going to do that. So we're actually not talking about retrospectives. We're actually not interested in what you were doing 2 years ago. We're really interested, and we've got an article, new article coming up in the magazine. Okay, Ernie, where on earth are you taking yourself and are you taking us now? What's new What's happening?
What's new? What's happening?
Oh, what's new? Well, I think the most important thing I can talk to you about, Richard, is my new mathematical orientation. I know that might be a bit of a puzzle for you because you're coming from a humanistic point of view. But let me show you a picture of a book I'm reading right now about by Steve Sogas, and the book's about infinite powers. I first met Steve Sogas about 50 years ago.
No.
That is 50 years ago. It was one summer, and I felt like taking this was like extracurricular, and this Steve Sogas was giving a seminar. I don't know if it was more than two or three sessions. And he was talking about things like calculus, and I didn't know what he was talking about. Finally, 50 years later, he produces this book, 2016.
Clarity takes a while.
Yes.
We should all remember that.
He's published many other papers. He calls himself an applied mathematician. But to my way of thinking, he's a kind of a genius. He has invented fantastic demonstrations of calculus. For example, you can take a pie or pizza round shape, and you can change it with differentiation and integration into a bar, like a
rectangle.
Yeah.
So, you know, teaching shape shifting through mathematics.
So this, the first chapter of this book is all you need to know. He is saying that calculus, which we think is mathematics and higher mathematics, is the basic language of science.
So then if it's the basic language of science,
yes,
then it's the basic language of the soul.
Okay.
I was going to say the same thing. It's the basic language of life. I must admit, I was asked a little while ago in a religious group who were saying, you know, what do you think of God and various things? And I said, well, okay, there's lots. But I think if there is a God, for me, it would be that God is mathematics.
Okay.
So take us on, Ernie. Take us on.
So Steve Sogas gave us a talk about something called calculus, but I didn't know what it meant 50 years ago. Now he's published many books since that time, The Power of X, The Joy of Mathematics, and he seemed to be what he calls himself, an applied mathematician. But in this book, he gets down to fundamentals, the fundamentals of calculus.
Now, and the language of the universe.
Yes, calculus is the language of the universe.
Yeah.
Calculus has two stories, one called differentiation and one called integration. And there are two forms of calculus. Differentiation helps you focus in on one or two spots that you want to study. And integration integrates it literally with the whole world, you might say.
Well, you know, Ernie, one of the questions that Richard asks is, where are you right now?
Right.
So when I think about it, from the earliest years, when you were a young boy and you had the encyclopedias all around you because you were looking at different elements of things.
Yeah.
And you still are. Yeah. I mean, and so the integration, in helping this to be the simplistic things, there's certain ideas that spark you. Like, you know, when you're a kid or you're a teen or a young adult or like even now, you know, of something that sparks you that you just never forget. And so 50 years goes by and Ernie still remembers the lecture he went to with this man.
Yes. What people don't know about hypnosis is that it's a science and this infinite powers, infinity, the concept of infinity in calculus is a new language of science, all the sciences. In this book, he also pursues, well, does it say anything about the humanities? Yes, it talks about all the humanities. What we're talking about is a misperception by most lay people, a misperception in particular about hypnosis. Hypnosis is a, well, you name it, a romantic kind of a, well, what was the first publication in Science magazine? In 1950, Rabbits published in Science a short article and a graph. And in this graph, he graphed the electrophysical correlates of hypnosis. And it went something like this, Richard. Before hypnosis, you know, he's got electrodes all over your head. You see the typical wavy lines and many wavy lines. Yeah, that's very characteristic of neural action. But occasionally, every 90 minutes or so, there comes a period where there's a curved break in that horizontal line, and suddenly the line starts going down, and Rabbits published this line. So here's normal consciousness, and then for no apparent reason, the line starts going down, down, down. And if I talk to a person, the line goes back up, and you can just see the person jacking themselves up to hear, well, what's the doctor asking me? Okay, so the horizontal line is normal consciousness. The line going down means automatically every 90, 120 minutes, the person goes into a rest state. And then there's a lower line, again horizontal, for about 15 minutes. And then, for no apparent reason, it goes back up and goes up to the place where it started and a little bit beyond for a couple minutes, and then it settles down to normal consciousness. This is hypnosis. This was the first electronic measurement of hypnosis. Science magazine only published one paper on hypnosis. Oh, they published a lot of papers on hypnoid things, but hypnoid means a drug.
Right.
Science, our major scientific magazine, only published one paper on science written by Rabbits, and Rabbits described what Erickson called catalepsy, that a person was very quiet, and that was identified with this lowering of the electrophysiological principle. 20 minutes the person stayed in it, and then they jump out. Why 20 minutes? Well, I wrote a book about that once, the 20-minute break. In this book, I describe for the first time how Erickson used a number of indicators of trance readiness. At the end of the book, I summarize and I call them indicators of trance readiness. That the person starts blinking their eyes. They look up. They seem distracted. These are worded indicators that they were going into a spontaneous trance. And when they did, Erickson simply said, "That's fine. Continue just as you are." And when the electrophysiological principles came down, the person was in catalepsy. They didn't move. It seems as if they were in a trance. And people began calling it a trance. In my book, The 20-Minute Break, I show this electrophysiological measurement of trance. Most people think of trance as, oh, la la da, you talk and da 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 da, and you talk and they give an analogy, and they have no concept of science. They have forgotten the rarest article published in Science, the only article ever published by Science, by the way. And in that article, Gravis sketches out the electrophysiological. It's like a U, you might say.
So there is, it's really the mind-body-mind that we observe. So when we're with someone and we see changes, so when we're with someone, if we're with a loved one, and you know when a loved one needs to be quiet, or as a therapist, that you see these signs that the person is really going within. And the thing that you've really taught me right from the get-go is you've taught me that's when you as a therapist stop talking. You know, that the person is then there doing their work. And so what you're talking about, Ernie, you're talking about something that's really important, which is that when you're honoring the physiology that's going on within the person, and you're feeling it, if you're sitting there with them, you're actually sensing it as well, that this is the true path. And just stand out of the way and let the client go forward, or let your loved one go forward to discover whatever this new consciousness is.
Yes, and I
people looking for patience. Oh, you got asthma, you got all these psychosomatic symptoms. There's a psychological source. Come into my office and lay on the couch and we'll find those sources. That was Freud's approach. Hypnosis is defined by science with this U shape. It's the electrophysiological modification of the nerves in this state. If a person is on automatic pilot, that is, they're saying yes, 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 but they're not thinking critically until it's over, and then they come up and the line goes up and they're in normal consciousness.
And then often people say, "I'm so sorry, doctor, I actually wasn't paying attention to what you were saying."
Yes. And I think what's really interesting is it reasonable to say, because one of the things, Ernie, that we talk about in the book on mirroring hands, and we talk about in other areas, is the idea of being aware of what is natural, of the naturalness of people. And this cycle, certainly we're talking about it here in the therapeutic room. We're talking about it in the experience of hypnosis. But what really stood out when you were describing Ravitz's curve was almost for no reason, it starts to go down. And then for almost no reason, it starts to go up. Because, of course, I've seen this flow, this 20-minute pause in people at parties, in people at the cinema, in people in all kinds of areas of life. And this idea of attaching a word like psychotherapy or hypnosis or trance is something additional to try and describe. It's almost a differentiation to try and pinpoint certain aspects of this very, very natural, broad-ranging response that human beings have every hour and a half or so.
Well, it's a time that with when you find that 20-minute pause, that it's a time that you really know where the person is in the four-stage creative process.
Yeah.
And so it's a time that it's, to me, it's that magic time, or it's that sacred time where you can grow.
And a lot of people get to that time and push through it. Yeah, sorry, Ernie, I was saying, yeah, and we've, in our culture, we have this thing of if you rest or if you pause. Yeah, if you rest or pause, you're bad.
Process on these four stages of a hypnosis that were ever published in Science.
Mm. Mm.
For those listeners who maybe haven't read, you know, some of the articles that were published by you guys, maybe could we just quickly step through this four-stage creative process? Would that be okay?
Absolutely. The four-stage creative process is based on psychobiology. So it's something that's natural. And as long as you don't fight it, it all goes well. But if you try to railroad over your breaks, it's not going to go as well for you if you do it all day, every day. Would you like to describe the four-stage creative cycle,
yes.
Ernie?
Here's what Darwin called it. Darwin, in his book on evolution, said, people think evolution takes millions of years, but actually evolution takes place on an daily and hourly periods. This is my diagram showing how the first stage of the creative process is curiosity. Richard, did you hear curiosity?
I'm loving it, Ernie.
And the second is incubation. You've got something from the outside world. What is that? And then you think about it and you go through this Bindu bridge. It's from Eastern philosophy. Suddenly you say, oh, this is what it means, aha, and you get an insight, that's stage three. And then you come back to normal consciousness, rationalizing how this is a new thought or some thought built on other thoughts. The fourth stage creative process, it takes place on the genomic level, on the protein level. And the first two stages are stages of arousal. You're curious. Remember this book, this picture.
Yes, and we'll have these pictures in the show notes, everybody. Just look for those. This is the great homunculus now.
This is one way of portraying the mirroring hands. The hands are so huge. The lips are so huge. This is a photograph of a person. This is a caricature showing that the hands have more real estate, more neurons attached to them. And this wasn't my invention. There was a physiologist back in the 20s who discovered this mind-body parts. Do you use this concept in the mirroring hands, Richard?
Oh, absolutely. We speak of the neuroscience and the physiology connection to the body and the beauty of the importance of the hands over evolutionary time. That Ernie Rossi and Richard Hill aren't making this up. We're just accessing this beautiful natural gift that has been given to us over time. Absolutely.
And I do know, Ernie, that something that's been absolutely fascinating you lately are the cosmic rays.
Yes, but that's another ball of wax. There's cosmic rays hitting Earth, and they come from beyond the sun. And when they hit Earth, they scatter, and they're scattering could be influencing our neurotransmitters. our neural action. That's just the summary of it.
And also when you think about combining that with the universe is expanding, the yes. universe is getting bigger. How is the universe getting bigger? How is our consciousness getting larger? How is our brain getting heavier? These are the questions that we think about.
Yeah, and we need to keep asking these questions with the idea of the complex system. We can have very limited ideas of what is in our environment, but as you begin to utilize science and utilize knowledge and utilize our understanding of that mathematics in itself is a guiding feature of something that goes right out to the extents of the universe, and that there are impacts that are occurring to us that we don't even, we may never understand. As someone said, our brain may not, has yet a lot of evolving to do before we get to everything. But these ideas of these cosmic rays, of neutrinos, of various particles which are flowing through the Earth all the time, that they are having some impact is a question that deserves exploration. I mean, maybe we're the prescient, we're the early ones, and it won't be for another 100 years that they get the machinery to understand it. But isn't it fascinating and exciting and stage one curious to embark on this possibility?
Okay. Our time is almost up, Catherine tells me.
Yep.
So let me summarize.
Please do.
I have been misunderstood by the hypnosis world. I go back to Ravitz's original publication in Science in 1950. Why don't you hear about these things? Because the powers that be in hypnosis don't believe in Ravitz. They derogatize them. Ravitz published in Science, he published a neuroscience curve, and that defines hypnosis. It defines the four-stage creative process. I brought those two things together, and it describes essentially what hypnosis is. It's a break in normal conscious. Normally, it goes down for half an hour, and a person comes up and, oh, let's see, Erickson used this analogy. He's riding on a train or a bus, and he sees a person looking at a newspaper, and he's studying the newspaper. All of a sudden, the guy looks up, closes the paper, and gets off. The person was actually in a trance when he was looking at that paper, staring at it fixedly. This is how we get all the colorful stories of Erickson and how he manifests hypnosis. But my main thing I'd like to leave you with is mine is a naturalistic, it's a scientific, it's a mathematical, it's a stem cell, STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math approach.
And how wonderful that is.
Yes,
to be based on something where the universe really is continuing to grow, where the mathematics and looking at something that's another language.
Yeah.
And this is exactly our in the title of now we've fully sort of evolved into the science of psychotherapy, and the science being the knowledge of and the knowing of, and more importantly, I think the word science means the wonder, the numinosum, and the desire to explore the more, the something else. And suddenly here we are, albeit 50 years later, we are being introduced to Stephen Strogatz and the infinite language of calculus, not the boring, dull school, I don't want to do this stuff, but the possibility that this mathematics, this shift in cycle, this ultradian rhythm, this four-stage creative cycle, this basic rest activity cycle, this man reading his paper in the bus, are all facets and opportunities for us to understand something about our life.
Yes.
How extraordinary and how simplistic so much life seems to be since I, before I met you guys. I used to just think it was acting and fun. Now it's unbelievable and amazing. And every time I walk down the street, my mind is blown. And people say, what's that? And so this is the talk. So anyway, that's my little summary of what we've heard today.
Wonderful. So we're twins. We said wonderful at the same time.
We did.
But that's it, that looking for that joy of life, that curiosity, the expansive nature. And I really do believe in the work of Ernest and mine too. It's about that.
Yeah.
Yes, Catherine's work centers about Gayatri.
Well,
it's not psychology.
he's thinking Gayatri was the guy.
Story of the king and the sage. And in the end, after all the stories, the king has to give up his belief in himself, his kingdom, the outer reality. And he has to go into inner meditation to find the inner reality.
And then becomes the sage.
And this perhaps is just a lovely introduction, explanation of our passage through life. But we have had a passage through our podcast, which now we're going to leave you guys and let people contemplate these fascinating possibilities of exploration and things that can actually bring us together that we're avoiding for reasons I don't know, but of social pressures, of various things. But calculus, the story of calculus and the language of the universe is a beautiful way to bring us into where you are at now. And ladies and gentlemen, because how old's Ernie now? 85, 80?
86.
Six.
And 86. And we wish everyone a numinous life.
Okay. Well, from us here, bye for now.
Bye for now.
Okay. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Okay, Richard, fantastic. I did say before the show, make sure it doesn't get too technical, because I know Ernest and Catherine, they have such a high level of knowledge about technical details. But I understood all of that. So,
oh, fantastic. I was a little worried. Although what we will do, of course, in the show notes, we'll have those diagrams, the rabbit's graph and the four-stage creative cycle, and also the homunculus image.
Oh, yes.
And we've got all those. And that'll be it'll really helpful just to have a look at that. But you'll also be able to see that, I think those images, some of those images might be also in the paper that we've talked about in the magazine reading that we've got there for you. So there's lots to check out. And more challenging, more sort of blue sky stuff. Mm-hmm. And as I said in the at the end of the stuff, we need to go blue sky. Then we also have to get very practical, as we do in other things. Then we need to go blue sky, then practical. And this is actually what I talk about, is the natural flow between rigidity and chaos,
right?
Is that we lift ourselves up sometimes from those practical applied things that are starting to get a little bit dull. And then we go off into the blue sky, and then we bring the blue sky back to practical and applied. And so this is a part of the flow. And that's what I enjoyed about the talk today. And I got to go and get this book and read about, the story of calculus and the language of the universe. Sounds cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to be honest, it makes me a little bit nervous about mathematics, but, you know, willing to explore. And this is what I love about this show too. You know, we like you said, we can go in all sorts of different directions and blue sky, and then very, you know, feet on the ground, practical, and it's just fun.
And every direction takes us somewhere.
Right.
And that's what's exciting about it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us here on the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. Richard and I will be back next week. Actually, I don't know who we'll have next week, but we'll have someone exciting and it will be fun.
Fantastic. I look forward to it. There's a mystery for me too. Okay. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. For more great science, go to thescienceofpsychotherapy.com.